Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Here are a few of the words the New York Times once used to describe our next guest, Stephen Burt. The words are extremely precocious, cross-dresser, passionate booster and fanboy, lucid, insightful, obsessive, energetic, eclectic. He's an expert in both science fiction and women's basketball. But above all, this Harvard English professor is, quote, one of the most influential poetry critics of his generation, an heir to the likes of Harold Bloom. Stephen Burt has just published his third poetry collection. It's called Belmont, in honor of the town he calls home. And he joins us now in the studio. Stephen Burt, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So the collection, it has this bittersweet sense throughout much of it about being a parent and arriving in a new place in life and living in Belmont. But I'd like it if you could start by reading one of your pieces directly from the collection. It's called Belmont Overture, Poem of 8 a.m.
Certainly. It's about settling down and settling in and trying not to settle for, about 3 miles from the urban core, where the not-quite-wild bald turkey, looking so lost and inquisitive next to the stop for the 74, peers into the roseless rosebush up at the pointless oar above one townhouse's swept steps, and the U.S. and floral and nautical flags flaunt their calm semaphore. Walking past them today with our stroller, we note as we pass the wreath of real twigs on our next-door neighbor's door, and beside it another, not sold in any store, made of pipe cleaners and plastic oak leaves. It looks like a nest, something Nathan could put together with the rest of his gregarious preschool class. We have learned to carry everywhere sunscreen and insect repellent, and pretzel sticks, and aquaphor, in case any shrubs scratch the kids. We mean it when we say we like it. We feel sure it's safe around here, and once we feel safe, it's our nature to say we're unsatisfied and pretend to seek more.
That's Stephen Burt reading his poem, Belmont Overture, Poem of 8 a.m. So much of your new collection, Belmont, deals, I mean, I hear about the uncertainty, maybe uncertainty is not the right word, but sort of an emotional challenge about parenthood and about living in Belmont. Where did all that come from?
It came from parenthood. We like living in Belmont very much. It's the right place for us. A number of the poems, especially early on in the collection, are about that dual feeling that I want to ascribe to the very fortunate adult life that I have and that I think some other readers have had too, that realizing these are the right choices, realizing this is the right place for us doesn't exclude and in fact harmonizes with the feeling that inside we are more than we are outside, that there are other things we could have done, other people we'd like to be, other lives that we imagine living that we still wish we could live, even if you've made the right choice, as I have. There can still be a sense that there's other stuff out there. No one gets everything out of life because some possibilities exclude others. And the town of Belmont where we live, and also the town of Belmont in Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice, which is the other reason for the title, which is a place where lovers flee from the big city in the Merchant of Venice and where they settle down and establish their love life of their own. These are towns that say you can have what you want most, but you can't have everything. And that's, I suppose, a thread that runs through the book. Even if you have what you want most, you can't have everything. You called it bittersweet, and thank you. I think that's in there.
Well, it's so interesting to hear this to me. And forgive my halting nature in asking you these questions because I'm filtering them through my own experience of parenthood, and I know exactly what you mean. You enter this new undiscovered country.
Thank you.
And yet it's one whose experience is shared by so many others. And that's one of the things that I found through your poem. And maybe it was because so much is rooted, it's physically rooted in places that we and the listening audience know. So what is it like for you to cast those locations, Belmont, the Charles River, all that, into verse?
It's fun. I think about place a lot. When I was a college student, I had summer jobs writing travel guides, and I had to think of something to say about places very fast. And I discovered that there was a big difference between writing about a place that you could assume your readers already knew, the Empire State Building, perhaps, and writing about a place most of your readers might not have seen. And a lot of the places in Belmont, I think, are in between. They're familiar to many of us in Boston, or we know places like them. You haven't been to Belmont, but you've been to Lexington or Brookline, which are different, but not that different. And when you're writing about a place, you're also thinking about what your readers already know. You're thinking about the culture, the history, the people who live there, and you're thinking about the sight lines, the physical experience of the place. And I was trying to balance those two, the culture, history, people, and the physical sensory experience in these poems of place.
So there's one of your poems that so beautifully draws on that sensory experience, and I'm wondering if you could read it to us. It's called Storrow Drive in the Sun.
Thank you. Citgo sign, we love you, though we do feel guilty about it. We used to believe the city paid your bills. All that neon and the color off, too, not red. Red-orange. Big, I mean big, three stories, or say expansive, though they also look expensive. Windows, too sadly square to look residential. Too glassy, too showy to fit a factory. Maybe they make the sun shine on all the ideas. They hatch ideas from eggs, round, pockmarked, translucent eggs, each one the height of a four-year-old child. Really, though, children are taller than ideas. And nobody has ideas the way you can have a baby. They just come to you like rock doves who pace on a roof, then settle, then fly away, becoming pigeons in 10,000 years, then iridescing to beat the band. Oh, self-important hub, you fit me more than any other where. Both of us seem to require minor repair. Oh, brass boathouse angel, oh, white on green arrows, looking down on me from inner suburb signs. Keep more water safe, river, away from the rowers. It's okay if you want to freeze.
I love that last line.
Thank you.
How many of us have had an inner dialogue with the river as we walk next to it on the Esplanade or see it rush past us when we're on Storrow Drive?
That poem began in a taxi cab, actually. but I don't know when it got finished. Yeah. There may have been walks involved.
Well, that was Storrow Drive in the Sun, read by Stephen Burt. He's a Harvard English professor, and this is his third collection of poetry. It's called Belmont. Now, Stephen Burt, in the introduction to this conversation, I quoted extensively from the New York Times, the magazine, which wrote quite a wonderful feature about you last year. And in it, they called you one of the most important poetry critics of your generation, which is quite a mantle to bear. And I'm wondering how you feel about that and the impact that your criticism has had on new and emerging poetry in America.
Well, I'm very thankful to Mark Oppenheimer, who wrote that piece. I hope he's right, because I want people to read the poets I most admire. That's one of the reasons I got into this whole poetry criticism game in the first place. How I feel about being a critic, or about being a critic people pay attention to? I suppose if I were the only one around, it would be daunting and intimidating, but I think I'm one of a number of poetry critics who are more or less of my generation, who are trying to sort out and sift and have public debates about what contemporary poetry does and can do and has done. Maureen McLean and Daisy Freed and Angie Malenko and Dan Chason, who lives right around here and teaches at Wellesley, and a number of other very good writers.
So what do you think, this might be a slightly unfair question, but what do you think the poetry critic Stephen Burt would say about the poems of Stephen Burt.
I hope that he or I would say that the poems are quite varied internally, that some of them speak to very old modes of writing, and some of them speak to the contemporary, to the present, and that they are the kinds of fairly traditional poems that people fascinated by experiment, by the radically new, would also want to read.
Well, on that note, I think we have enough time for just one more poem. It's one that just I found so lovely today. I'd love to hear it again. It's called Butterfly with Parachute.
Oh, thank you so much. A real one wouldn't need one, but the one Nathan draws surely does. Four oblongs, the size and color of popsicles, green apple, toasted coconut, and grape, flanked, two per side, by billowing Valentine hearts in a frame of scotch tape. Alive, it could stay off the floor for a few unaerodynamic minutes, thrown as a paper airplane for one or two more. Very sensibly, therefore, our sun gave it something, not to keep it apart from the ground forever, but rather to make safe its descent. When we ask that imagination discover the limits of the real world only slowly, maybe this is what we meant.
Stephen Burt, when I read this poem a little earlier today, it occurred to me that childhood can be romantically, if not ideally, thought of as a poetic state of existence itself. And when you look at your children, is that what you see? Is that what in part inspired this?
I would like all states of existence to be poetic. But when you know this as a parent, it sounds like when you're a parent, when you're an authority figure over children, you're often have to get them to do things they don't want to do, to be practical, to show up on time, to stop making that amazing drawing, to stop building with Legos, to stop reading, to stop writing, because we have something we have to do. Adulthood is often about doing things you have to do and knowing that you have to do it. And childhood, at its best, can be about doing things you want to do, imagining doing whatever you feel like in the knowledge and the confidence that if there's something else you have to do, an adult will come along and make sure you do it.
Well, Stephen Burt is a professor of English at Harvard. He's a poet and literary critic, considered one of the most important poetry critics in the country right now. His new book of poetry, his third collection, is called Belmont. Stephen Burt, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here.
Listeners, stick with us. There's Cuban jazz coming up. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.